So, Jun Lee, tell me about a day in the life of a minor league baseball player.
So I went down to Huntsville, Alabama, to spend time with Kieran Lovegrove, who is a pitcher for the Rocket City Trash Pandas, which is the AA affiliate for the Los Angeles Angels. And his life is pretty typical of many minor leaguers. He goes to the ballpark every single day at 1 p.m., gets back home at midnight, 1 a.m. after a game, goes to bed around 2 to 3 a.m. after cooling down, wakes up the next day at 11 a.m. and does the whole thing over again.
If you're going to do it for 8-9 years, it's a really, really difficult thing to do, and it wears guys down. If that's built into the system to weed guys out, I don't know. I don't think it should be.
He is working multiple jobs in the off seasons. He has worked as a ride sharing driver for Uber and Lyft. He has worked as a warehouse worker for UPS and Best Buy. He is subsisting on the road on a junk food diet, subsisting on food that he says the team is providing but is often not adequate in terms of nutrition for living the life of a professional baseball player. He has struggled with mental health issues for almost his entire professional baseball career. This is a very typical life for minor leaguers across the country, and more minor leaguers are speaking up because they feel no other way to channel their anger and frustration.
The potential of making the big leagues is presented to us as something that is an equal opportunity for every player. In reality, it's not. There are massive inequalities in the minor leagues, just like there are massive inequalities in the U.S.
America's national pastime, it turns out, is built on a myth. A myth about what it's really like to be a professional baseball player. Because the majors, the big leagues, that's one thing. But the minors are a different, darker world entirely. Today, ESPN's Jun Lee shines a light on how and why things have become so difficult, so hopeless, inside minor league baseball, and when that myth might change. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, September 30th. This is ESPN Daily.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jun Lee, I've been talking to you about this piece that you've just reported for a while. And what made you want to look at minor league baseball players in the first place?
I think there's been the sentiment around baseball for a long time that the situation for the minor league was really screwed up from a financial standpoint, from a living condition standpoint. I think there's this very romanticized idea of what it is to live life in the minor leagues from movies like Bull Durham.
You've been in the majors?
Yeah, I've been in the majors.
Where were you? You've been in the show, man?
Yeah, I was in the show. I was in the show for 21 days once. 21 greatest days of my life.
You see this in Eastbound and Down. I think there's this very American idea of what it's like to be in the minor leagues, how it kind of represents the American dream, how you put in your dues for a really, really long time, and then you climb your way up, and then you have a chance at making millions of dollars and glory and fame and all of that stuff that comes alongside of it. And I think the reality of the situation is something that's probably much closer to what the American dream actually looks like, which is a system that is favored towards wealthier people, a system that is exploiting a lot of working class people. And I think that manifests itself in the minor leagues through the way that Major League Baseball is operating the minor leagues at this current moment and the living conditions that a lot of minor leaguers go through.
Yeah, I mean, movies, June, have given us this idea of romance, this idea of nobility, of virtue, that you ride the bus, you maybe fall in love with Susan Sarandon, you hear a couple of inspiring monologues, and then guess what? You've achieved, yes, the American dream, but it just the numbers of this, the salary range is jarring, man. Like, what are the numbers actually like?
In 2021... most minor leaguers will make between $8,000 and $14,000 between April and October. The U.S. federal poverty line is $12,880.
Wait, so I just want to do the math here, June, because these are the players who are, in theory, trying to become the best baseball players on the planet, but their season, which, as you say, April to October, 7 months long, they need to train still in the off season, in the off months. And so that leaves them with no time, and it leaves them not even above the poverty line.
Yeah, they're often making less money than the minimum wage, and they're working these really weird jobs. Like, baseball is objectively a really weird job that has really weird hours. Working 60-hour weeks, you're traveling. There's not time to, like, have a second job, especially if you want to do baseball well. And so there's all these weird factors that come into it, and guys aren't making enough to just pay the rent. I talked specifically to one player, Shane Kelso, who retired during this year. He was making $1,600 a month, was paying $2,000 a month in rent in the San Bernardino area, and that was before, you know, paying for food and other living necessities, and as a result, he was losing about $1,000 a month paying to play. He said, if he hadn't retired by the end of August, he would have been completely bankrupt. And that is the situation for more minor leaguers than the kind of romantic idea of what it's like to climb the minor leagues to the majors might let on. Between 1981 and 2010, 82.4% of players drafted never made the major leagues. So that's the vast majority of them.
So I guess the most blunt question I have then at the very top here is, why do all of these minor leaguers tolerate this? Why has this been the status quo for so long in terms of them accepting these conditions?
Because it's the way that things have always been. It's the way that lots of players have come up. And so there's this culture of silence that develops as a result. So I talked to Rays pitcher Colin McHugh, who used to be on the executive subcommittee for the MLB Players Association. And he basically said that players are being groomed to stay quiet and stay silent about all this stuff in service of Major League Baseball, because if you speak out, it looks bad for the entire sport. And so there's this culture of silence that kind of permeates the entire minor leagues, and there's a carrot on the stick of one day you might make millions and millions of dollars at the Major League level, and as a result, you should stay quiet right now about what it's like to actually live in the minor leagues.
And part of your reporting here, June, involved visiting someone living that life, Kieran Lovegrove of the Rocket City Trash Pandas. And by the way, the Trash Pandas, all minor league teams have like weird names. That is the best of them, I think.
Amazing.
But you told us about Kieran and his life, and how did your visit with him even come about?
So I talked to Kieran at the end of July, and then shortly thereafter, I talked to my editor. I was like, I think I have to go down to Alabama to talk to him to see what the living conditions of his apartment was like. So I took a plane down and went down to Huntsville, Alabama. And Kieran has an apartment that's about a 10-minute drive away from the field. And he said it was one of the best living conditions that he's had in the minor leagues. And this is an apartment where seven people at one point were living in, and two people were in the living room, and one person was in the kitchen.
So if that is one of the best living situations Kieran Lovegrove has ever had, what are the other types of places he's lived?
So when Kieran went down to Alabama to play for the Trash Pandas at the beginning of the season, he was having a lot of difficulty finding a landlord who'd be willing to accommodate their living situations. And so for the beginning of the season, he was sleeping in the luxury suites of Toyota Field, which is where the Trash Pandas play. He has friends across baseball who have to sleep in clubhouses. This is not an unusual set of circumstances. Guys sleeping in cars.
Wait, this is in the ballpark. He's literally living at the office.
Yes, he's literally sleeping in a luxury suite at Toyota Field.
But housing, June, per your reporting here, it's just the beginning of Kieran's saga. What other difficulties has Kieran Lovegrove run into over the course of his career?
So he was a first-generation American. He was born in Johannesburg, South Africa. And he, unlike most players, was actually someone who received a big bonus. He received $400,000 after being drafted by the Cleveland baseball team. After agent fees and taxes, that $400,000 bonus turned to around $250,000.
I just start spending money like as soon as I'm getting it. Pretty much the moment I got that first check.
You're 17 years old.
17 years old, like, have zero financial literacy.
As he was going through the minor leagues, he started to develop issues with his mental health, depression, anxiety. I think he was having a very hard time grappling with the reality of what the minor leagues were like for a lot of his teammates. And so he fell into substance abuse and completely blew his signing bonus. And so he went from a bonus baby to someone who was living life like the rest of the other minor leaguers. And so he had to take on a second job as an Uber driver and a Lyft driver. He was working in a warehouse for Best Buy and UPS and was just generally struggling with his mental health.
If you're not in control of your life in any capacity, it will have severe cascading effects on your mental health. And I think that the exploitation of the minor leagues forces you to be put into a position where you have no control.
That led to him attempting suicide 6 years ago.
Yeah, that crashing realization of, like, you could do this for the rest of your life and you'll still be unhappy.
Yeah.
And it just made me consider, what's the point? So I grabbed my own gun, which I...
Because the safety on his pistol was on, he didn't end up dying. But Kieran noticed that there was a mental health crisis among a lot of his teammates. And baseball, which is notoriously culturally conservative, has had difficulty talking about these issues in the past.
One word that he used with you in your story that jumped out at me is dignity. What does he have to say about how dignity is this element that we need to understand when it comes to the minors?
I asked him the question about whether or not he could be happy as a minor leaguer. And in retrospect, it felt like kind of a naive question about happiness. Like, he feels as if, like, he can't be a respectable human being as a result of the living conditions of the minor leagues.
I do not think that we are allowed to have individual human dignity because of the situation that minor league baseball players are put in.
Mm-hmm.
There is just no dignity in the minor leagues anymore.
I think that was what really jumped out to me and made me realize the reality of what life in the minor leagues is like, is that a lot of these people, and Kieran attempted suicide as a result of this, feel as if they have no self-respect because of the way the system treats them financially from a housing perspective, the way that culturally baseball has been unable to address mental health. And the league is working on this. I talked to Billy Bean at the league office, whose primary job at Major League Baseball is trying to get people to talk more about mental health issues. But Billy Bean is only one person, right? This is not just on him to fix the mental health crisis of the minor leagues. Like, this is a larger cultural issue that stems from years and years of history of people being shamed about talking about their anxiety and their depression, their mental health issues in the sport.
So after you talk to these league executives who do care actually about better mental health awareness in baseball, it's also clear that the sport still has so much work left to do because, like, these problems don't affect everybody evenly, right? Like, you're describing, June, a situation where the individual circumstances for each minor leaguer, I mean, they really affect who does and does not get sufficient support here.
Yeah, I mean, for the players that I spoke to for the story, they said baseball is becoming a sport that's for more privileged people, and it's something that is a result of people not being able to afford baseball at lower levels, like travel ball and the circuit level and the showcases. That all requires money for people to get on the radars of Major League Scouts in the first place. And then on top of that, a lot of people who are able to grind through to get to the major leagues, they're people who either sign big bonuses, which is a vast minority of players who get drafted, or they're people who had their parents' support and had the financial background to be able to kind of live off that minor league salary.
So I just want to step back here, June, and get a back of the envelope sort of estimate on how many people are struggling or living like this. What is your sense of that in the minors?
So there's approximately 7,500-ish players in the minor leagues, and these circumstances aren't unusual. So I think it's pretty fair to say that hundreds, if not thousands, of people are dealing with the living conditions, the struggle with salary, the mental health issues across the minor leagues right now.
All right, if we're dealing with thousands of minor leaguers here, June, after the break, I want to learn how they got to living this way, how the status quo got established, and what it'll take to change.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, June, I also know that there have been massive changes to minor league baseball in recent years, especially. And we're talking about teams getting wiped off the face of the earth, getting cut. And that was controversial, of course, for the markets where those teams were based, for those cities, those local economies. So why did the footprint of minor league baseball shrink in this way?
MLB wanted to consolidate the minors because they wanted to maximize their profits and create a more efficient system of minor league baseball. So they wanted to reduce travel schedules. They wanted to be able to bring everyone under the umbrella of Major League Baseball's corporate system and share secrets about how to best create a business that maximizes profits for them.
So if the business was supposed to become more manageable as it got smaller, there were also supposed to be benefits, right, for the players who did remain playing for these teams. What was promised to come from those cuts?
Rising salaries, which, to MLB's credit, they did raise salaries, although players are saying that that's not enough. They're supposed to increase the conditions of the facilities because there wasn't really any standards for that across the board. And they were supposed to create just generally better living conditions. And I think that MLB is obviously a big corporate machine and things take time to implement. But the feedback that I've gotten from players is that this on the large scale is not happening for them.
So those salary increases, how much of an increase are we really talking about here?
So the salary increases specifically went up between 38 to 72%, depending on the level. And so at rookie and short season baseball, it went from $290 a week to $400. In Class A, it went from $290 to $500. In Double A, it went from $350 to $600. And in Triple A, it went from $450 a week to $700 a week.
So those, like, on paper are big percentage increases. But just to be clear here, the net total that we got to is still the total that's leaving us well below that living wage zone.
Right. The percentages look good on paper, but practically speaking, it's not enough to maintain a livable life in the United States.
So I'm curious then about just the minors as this business, because I get that teams need to develop and feed players to their major league clubs, but, you know, the money needs to add up here. I'm also not naive to any of the bottom line here. So does baseball see these teams more at this point as a revenue generator or as an avenue really for the talent development side of things?
So there's always been this tension in the minor leagues between the minor leagues being an entertainment product and a vehicle to support the growth of baseball nationally. And then there's also the business part of it. Is minor league baseball a business that's supposed to make money? And there's always kind of been debate between these two sides about if teams should be losing money in minor league baseball in order to invest in the future of the sport because they make so many profits off of it on the back end at the major league level.
Wait, so June, just so I understand this, because when I think of like the whimsical minor league teams across America, like the El Paso Chihuahuas, you know, the Padres AAA affiliate, do the Padres own the Chihuahuas? What's the financial relationship there like?
A lot of these minor league teams are owned by individual people who funnel into this big organization, and ultimately Major League Baseball and the parent clubs are responsible for the salaries and making sure that living standards are up to condition, making sure the facilities are up to date. So there's all these kind of rich people, basically middle managers across minor league baseball in this organization, but ultimately the responsibility funnels up to the parent clubs and the organizations there.
Well, why does Major League Baseball have all of this control and power here?
So there's a couple of aspects to this. I think first you have to explain the antitrust exemption that Major League Baseball has very uniquely, in that baseball received this antitrust exemption in 1922.
Yeah, that was when the Supreme Court, and this is very controversial, they found each individual baseball game to be entirely local, like as an event, meaning they were not interstate commerce, which then meant that the sport could not be subject to federal antitrust laws.
And as a result, they have a legal monopoly and authoritarian power over the professional futures of all these minor leaguers. Teams own their rights for 7 years. And if they want to retire or if they want to go play in Japan or Korea or Taiwan, the only way that happens is if the team decides to release them. And these teams have no financial incentive to release these players. And so as a result, if players want to go and make more money playing professional baseball elsewhere, they legally can't because these teams own the rights. And the difference between the minor leaguers and the major leaguers is that the major leagues players have a union that can collectively bargain, where minor league players can't sue and don't have a union. And so they're kind of stuck in the system that traps them in minor league baseball.
The players, in response to this in the present tense, what are they asking for, June? How are they going about trying to get a deal better than that one?
So there's a growing sentiment among not just minor leaguers, but people across baseball, agents, major league players, former executives, that the tide is turning where it seems like minor leaguers need a union in order to collectively bargain. But there's a lot of skepticism about logistically whether or not that will actually be able to happen.
So whether to unionize or not, I get that that is still in question. But in the meantime, June, do you think the teams are actually on a path toward meaningful change here? Because you report that you reached out to all 30 baseball teams, all 30 MLB teams, for comment on how they support minor league players, and 13 did not respond at all. 9 declined to comment. The other 8, they detail different levels of support. Some provide housing, meals, other benefits. It's just clearly a hugely mixed bag at the organizational level. But the people who work in baseball, the players, the execs in the majors, like on and off the record, what do they think about minor league players' rights?
I talked to one employee of an American League team, and they were like, this is a mistake that we're declining comment.
So this is a team employee saying that they wish their employer, the team, that they would actually speak out about how minor leaguers are getting treated.
There is a sense among teams right now that this situation is getting so bad, and the PR especially is getting very, very bad around it, that it is becoming an embarrassment and a black eye for the sport of baseball as a whole.
And so Major League Baseball and Commissioner Rob Manfred himself, you know, what is his office saying when they are questioned about this?
They're kind of sticking to the company line here, which is we consolidated the minor leagues in order to up the standards of our facilities and increase the pay for players and, you know, reduce in-season travel and create higher profit margins. But I think on the whole, they're struggling to articulate, you know, how they're going to respond to players speaking out, because this is going to only continue happening.
And when you talk to major leaguers, June, when you survey the landscape of the top of the ladder, what do those guys say? What are those guys doing as they see this crisis unfold?
So major leaguers are recognizing that there's a problem here. And so throughout the course of the pandemic, we saw a lot of major leaguers donating money to organizations that support minor leaguers. So David Price donated $1,000 to every single minor leaguer in the Dodgers system. Shin-Soo Chu did the exact same thing for everyone in the Texas Rangers system. The MLBPA donated $1 million to support minor leaguers. So I think a large group of people recognize that there is a problem here. But the minor leaguers are saying that this is a band-aid solution. This is a bigger systemic issue. And on top of that, they don't want to take the major leaguers' money. Like, they believe that these major leaguers have earned that money, and they want the system to be addressed on a much larger governing body level.
Well, it feels like a parallel to like the GoFundMe economy, where it's very nice yes. that people are donating, but that's not actually a sustainable solution to the system that has created these problems.
Right. It's like putting a Band-Aid onto a sinking ship. Like, there's water leaking everywhere and you're just trying to patch up these holes, but you can only do that for so long.
So you went to D.C., June, to get a measure of what the halls of power might do to exert pressure on this subject. What's your sense of the political future of this, the momentum behind change? What changes might come to these working conditions that clearly these players are saying are unacceptable?
I think the thing that has been the biggest development politically on the antitrust stuff in regards to Major League Baseball is that the Supreme Court has started to chip away at whether or not it makes sense anymore. And so during the case NCAA versus Alston, which was the case that eventually created the NIL stuff for college players.
Yeah, name, image, and likeness revolutionizing how players can profit off of their own likenesses. Yes.
Yes. So Neil Gorsuch, on behalf of a unanimous Supreme Court, went out of his way to question the legal status of baseball's antitrust exemption and specifically pointed at how much the market has changed over the course of the nearly 100 years since 1922 that was enacted into law. And then Brett Kavanaugh questioned the logic that MLB has pushed forward of minor league baseball being more of an apprenticeship or something like an artistic pursuit. Brett Kavanaugh basically said law firms can't conspire to keep entry-level lawyer salaries down in service of the love of the law, and hospitals can't cap nurses' salaries in order to create a pure form of helping sick people. They're basically questioning MLB's stance on why salaries are kept down, which is a result of the antitrust exemption. And so there's talk around D.C., specifically with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, that he would want to take a closer look at the antitrust exemption.
There is a reason why baseball is considered the national pastime. It's just not another business operation where the bottom line has got to prevail. It's not just another business where you can pay people low wages and then shut down.
There is a growing magnifying glass on this antitrust exemption for baseball and whether or not it makes sense for the country to have this be a part of our legal system.
So at the end here, June, I'm curious about Kieran Lovegrove, the player, the pitcher that you mentioned earlier in the show. What's next for him specifically?
So he's retiring after the season because he's done playing professional baseball and he wants to live a better life. He's going to go home, work with a high school team and be a pitching coach there. And he wants to be an advocate for minor leaguers.
I know I'm not the only person who has that type of love for the game. And I know that that can be exploited. And I know that that is being exploited. And I don't want to see guys who have that sort of passion for the game be taken advantage of.
He's coming out as bisexual. He wants to be an LGBTQ advocate for people in baseball. He acknowledged to me that speaking out about this might put him on some sort of blacklist that prevents him from getting a job in baseball in the future. But he was at a point with his own mental health and seeing the struggles of his teammates where he felt the need to put his career at risk in order to speak up about this publicly.
June Lee, thank you for reporting a story that I hope you come back and update us on again.
Yeah, this story is definitely not close to being over, so we'll see what happens moving forward.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.